Okay, we're here at the bottom of Ayin Bet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Tanur Banan. Hamolich Chavila Mimakom Lemakom. Person is transporting an item from place to place. Matzao Chaveiro Vamarlo. His friend bumps into him and says to him, Tanali, give it to me. Va'ani Ele Lecha Kederech Shemilin Lecha Boto Makom. And I will pay you the same price that you would have garnered in the other place. So it seems that the transportation was being done here because he was transporting from a place where it was cheaper to a place where it was more expensive. So he went to the new place, he'd be able to sell the merchandise for more. The person cuts him off on the trip and says, listen, I'll give you the price that you would have garnered in the new location. That way you don't have to take it up. And then Rashi adds on, Volichena ve'eseh tzarchai b'ma'ot adzman ploni. And I'll take it up there. And I'll take care of the money. I'll use the money in the meantime until such and such a time. So in essence, he's buying for it from him today, but he's not paying him the money till the later date, till he actually liquidates it and sells it in the new location. So he has usage of the money for that period of time, or in essence, there's a halva'a here. There is a loan here. Bishut mocher mutar. If it is in the possession of the seller, then it is mutar. As Rashi describes over here, that as long as the seller has responsibility for the merchandise until it is sold, then it is mutar, because then the loan doesn't begin until the period of time that he actually sells it. Because in the interim period, it's still in the possession of the seller, and so the seller is not garnering any benefit from the lokeach, from the buyer, postponing payment. Because had it been the other way around, which is b'reshut lokeach, asur. If it was in the possession of the lokeach, meaning right away the buyer is responsible for the merchandise, then you have a problem because that means that he is working on his behalf. Either he's paying him more today because of the delay of the repayment, or he is taking the items up to the new location where it's going to be more expensive and not charging him for that service. If he's not charging him for that service, that means that he's not charging him because the guy delayed payment or allowed him to pay at a later date. So for either of those two reasons, if the lokeach becomes responsible, the buyer becomes responsible immediately, that means it becomes a loan immediately. That means the merchandise is sold to lokeach today, but he doesn't have to pay today. He only pays at the later date. That's the equivalent of a loan. In consideration for that loan, then the buyer is, number one, paying him a higher price today, and number two, transporting it to the new location for free. So both of those items would be deemed as interest rebate for the fact that he has a delay in the payment. So Tosafot says over here, "Bishut mocher mutar kachon shenatan lo schar amalo mizono." It's a case where he pays him for the undertaking and his food, so he does pay for the transport. He pays for all the efforts or expenses that he undertakes. So in that case, he's making money on the transportation. But he's still paying more money than he should have for the price of the merchandise here. He's giving him the forward sold price at the higher location. So he'll make money from the fact that he is getting paid for transporting it. He will not make money by the fact that he's paying at the higher price and selling it at the higher price at the other location. But that delay of time, the elapsed amount of time, makes it effectively a loan during that period. Since it's a loan during that period, he is now paying the higher price rather than the current price, which means he's paying more money for the delay in payment. Now, Rashi made it clear here that the buyer has to have something to do with the money in the interim. The simple delay of the payment is not enough to deem it as interest unless his lack of payment gives him the ability to do something with the money in the interim. That's what the Gra notes over here. It says, "Nirba ayinai dim lo kein, she'en lo hana'a mutar b'chol inyan." If the quote-unquote borrower here, or the buyer, by having the postponement of the payment for the merchandise today, gets no benefit, meaning that he doesn't have anything to do with the cash anyway, it wouldn't have mattered, then it's not considered to be a loan because he's not doing anything with the cash. The lack of payment today makes no difference to him. He's indifferent between paying today and paying later on. It just happens to be that was the nature of the deal. If he doesn't have the money to pay for it today, that is hana'a because he's then giving him the ability to transport it and paying him for the transport. But Tosfot says, then what's the chiddush? If he's already paying him for the schar amalo umizono, then what is the chiddush here that if the b'shut mocher, it's mutar? Of course it's mutar b'shut mocher if he's paying him for the transportation costs. So he says, v'esh lamar, the seifa itzrich le, the latter part is the chiddush, b'shut lokeach asur, the sakadatcha, the lo mechzeke ribit. You would think it doesn't look like ribit. Because optically it looks like he's buying it at this price and he sells it at that price. So it looks like there is no rebate here. But the problem is that the lokeach already has possession of the item now, and therefore he's taking on the achrayut derech. Now when he's compensating him, he's compensating for him, it helps, but it doesn't help if the lokeach already is responsible for the item. Because if the lokeach is already responsible for the item, then he is taking on a responsibility because of the delay of payment. Or he's using the money in interim, getting a benefit from it. Whatever the issue is, there's still a loan outstanding because it became a loan immediately as soon as it goes into the reshut lokeach. If it stays in the reshut of the mocher, then there's no loan over here, and then you don't have to worry about all of this. Alright, so now, the next case is, Vamolich perot mimakom lemakom. Person is transporting merchandise products from place to place. Mitzao chavero, his friend finds him. Vamarlo, to namely, Vani alelecha perot sheishli ba'oto makom. Give them to me, and I'll replace them with the merchandise or product I have in that other location. So once again, they're moving the merchandise from a lower price location to a higher price location. This individual bumps into him here and says, give me whatever you're trying to sell there, and I'll replace it for you in the other location. He's basically saying, we're going to swap, but we're swapping at the price of the higher location. Because now, when I buy it, I'm going to replace it with the sa'ah in the higher location. The sa'ah in the higher location is going to have a higher price versus the sa'ah here, which is at a lower price. Im yesh lo perot b'oto makom, mutar. If he has merchandise or product in that location, it is mutar. Vim lav, asur. If not, that is asur. This is what is otherwise known as sa'ah bisa'ah, where you borrow merchandise and you return the same product later on. There we said it's problematic because of the problem of the appreciated price. The exception to that was if you have it in hand. Because if you have it in hand, then the person who gave you the sa'ah now will, in essence, take possession of whatever you're going to replace this sa'ah with, and then the appreciation happens in the hand of whoever provided you the sa'ah here. So the same thing is true here. Rashi says that hashta ukimnu birshute. We put the item as if it's in the possession of the seller, and therefore afagav delo mashich. Even though he didn't take a kinyan on the new stuff, sa'ah b'sa'ah lav ribit ktzutzahi. Exchanging a sa'ah for sa'ah is not real interest. It's only deemed interest. It looks like interest according to the Chachamim, and therefore it's avak ribit. V'chiyesh lo lo gazur. If he has it in possession, the Chachamim are not gazur. This is akin to what Rashi said yesterday on the Mishnah. The reason why when it's in his possession, there's no problem of sa'ah b'sa'ah, or there's no problem of selling it forward, is because the person is as if he takes possession of the item. And since it's as if he takes possession of the item, when it appreciates in his possession, and there's not interest. It's simply his product that is going up in price. Rashi back on Simon Kim Muhammad Aleph, as we mentioned yesterday, says that the reason is because you're subject to Misha Para. That once he gives you the money, or gives you the item, then you're not allowed to back out of the transaction. And that's what makes it the other parties, is because you're subject to Misha Para. We noted yesterday in the Mishnah, and today Rashi does the same thing. Here Rashi is soter what he said back then. Back then he said the reason that it's deemed to be in the possession of the individual is because of the fact that you're subject to Misha Parah. Tosafot said the same thing on Samach Bed Amud Bet. But here on the Mishnah and here today's Daf, Rashi says the reason is because Lo Gazur. It's only an Isur Ribit Mid Rabbanan. And the Rabbanan determined that if you have the item in possession or in stock now, then it's fine because it doesn't look like Ribit. We'll assume as if it appreciated in the hands of the individual who you owe the item to, whether you sold it forward or whether you are bartering a sa'ah here for a sa'ah there or at a future date. V'achamarim, malim b'makom ha'yoker k'makom ha'zol. So here's an interesting case. The chamarim can pay pricing in the more expensive place the same way that they do it in the cheaper place. ve'enan choshishim, and they don't have to worry about it. So the way that Rashi describes the case over here is that the chamarim are less than truckload truckers, meaning that they're the short-haul truckers. The gamalim are the long-haul truckers. So these are the short-haul truckers. They move from city to city, hauling things around. So the chamarim here are found in the more expensive location. The balabatim, people in that city, give them money. They give them cash, and then they go with that cash to the cheaper locations and purchase the product in the cheaper location on behalf of the balabatim here in the more expensive location. But they sell it to the balabatim here at that cheaper price. So they're in City A, where the price is, just make it easy, 100 per bushel. They're going to place B, where it's only 80 per bushel. So now they sell in their current location, they balabatim give them cash, they sell it to them for 80 a bushel for forward delivery, meaning that they will then go to the new location, bring it back, and give it to them. They go to the cheaper location, location B, and buy it there for 80 a bushel, and then bring it back and give it to the balabatim. Sounds like a terrible business, because they're selling it here for 80 a bushel, they're going and picking it up for 80 a bushel, meantime they are out all the costs of transportation and going back and forth, and they're giving it to the balabatim. So what it seems like is that the balabatim are giving them cash now, taking delivery in, say, a month from now when they bring it back from the other location, that is schar amtana. Basically, they're handing them cash, they're giving them money today for delivery in a month, and they're giving them the cheaper price. So it seems that they're benefiting the balabatim with the cheaper price because they give them cash up front. So Gemara here says that's totally fine. My time, it makes sense for them, and they're willing to do this because they show them the market price. The way that Rashi explains it over here is, by having the money of these people, they're well known as purchasers. And therefore the sellers in the cheaper place know them. They give them other items on credit. They give them other things to make money with. Because they're recognized as merchants, because they're coming here with this money, that gives them other opportunities. And those other opportunities are what benefits them over here. The other possibility is that they megalohim tara, is that they show them or they indicate to them where to find the cheaper market. Which is that when they get, people know them, and they know that they have cash and they're coming, so they tell them where to go, or which locations to go to, in order to garner the lower prices. So they are a beneficiary of having the money of the balabatim. That hana'ah that they get offsets the hana'ah that they're giving to the balabatim by transporting it for free, with the delay of the payment. So that additional benefit is worth it to them, to do it for free for the balabatim because they're getting something else in exchange. It's worth it to them because the suppliers in the new city discount it to them. The way Rashi reads it, discounts it to them, they get wind of the fact that they're making no margin on this. And since they know they're not making any margin on it, they're willing to sell it to them at a lower price so that they make some margin because they want to sell in bulk, they want to sell to these guys. And so they know they have a ready buyer with cash. So they're willing to sell to them, say again, in our example, where it's 100 in A per bushel, it's 80 per bushel in the B location. And they're selling it in A for 80. So they're making nothing on it. When the sellers or suppliers to them in B get wind of that, they'll sell it to them for 75 or 70 in order that they make some money. That's what Rashi suggests. There are others that suggest that it is a bulk discount. It is worth it for them to transport the balabatim's stuff for free because they get a bulk discount. They are purchasing not only for the balabatim that they sold already, but for themselves as well. But since they have such large quantities, then they discount it to them. And in discounting it to them, that's what benefits them, is that they get a discount on the remainder of what they buy for themselves to transport back. And that is the benefit that they garner. That benefit that they garner offsets the value that they provided, which is basically the free transport of the items between the locations. Rashi says something unusual here, which Tosafot is very upset about. He says, Noach lahem lichuach, liot shluchim. They are willing to do this and be the transport for free, the kabel alehem achrayuta derech alkach, and even to accept full responsibility for the merchandise. Now, Tosafot is upset about that, because Tosafot over here points us back to Samachay Amud Aleph. And back on Samachay Amud Aleph, that was the Tarsha the Rav Chama. In Tarsha the Rav Chama, we used to give the items to the individuals, and they would give him the higher price at the higher location. The Gemara over there said that it worked because they had special benefits from Rav Chama. The special benefits were no taxes, and that they got the first right to sell. They got an exclusivity agreement when they went in to sell in a new location. So for those benefits, they're willing to transport on behalf of Rav Chama. Rashi himself, back there, on Daf Samachay Amud Aleph, said, Shaya achrayut alicha al Rav Chama, that the obligation for the transport, or the achrayut, was on Rav Chama. He was responsible for the merchandise until it reached a new location, so that it wasn't a loan until he reached the new location. And so Tosafot says, I don't understand. Rashi back there also agreed that you have to take responsibility for the merchandise, even though they were garnering benefits like tax-free and exclusive sales. Over here, what they're getting is much smaller benefit. They're not getting that type of benefit. That's a huge benefit. And yet Rashi still said that the seller has to have achrayut in order for it to work. Over here, Rashi says for a small consideration, they're willing to take on all responsibilities over here. And therefore, the Baal Yad Tosafot says that he does not agree at all. That on the return trip, the responsibility was with the Baal HaBayit, meaning the produce was always in his responsibility, because otherwise it's too big an undertaking for these individuals. If they take responsibility for it as well, that undertaking is not worth it for them just for that little consideration that they are getting. And so therefore it has to be under the achrayut of the Baal HaBayit. And therefore, v'chamarim, ayu mistakrim b'ma'ot b'halicha b'makom ha'yoker b'makom ha'zol. And they used to take the money, the cash that they got up front, they benefited b'shum schora, which is what you had suggested, that they are benefiting from the fact that they now have something to do in that city, and now they have something to bring back to the Baal HaBayit. But because the Baal HaBayit provided them cash up front, they can buy stuff in the more expensive city now, some other product, and sell it in the location that is cheaper. So their money basically afforded them the opportunity to do business in both directions. And so even though on the way back, they're not getting anything, they're doing it basically for free with no margin, but they have what's its money now to use to take in the other direction, schora in the other direction. And so that is essentially the loan. They're lending their money to do the business. And it would have been problematic had it not been that there was some sort of consideration to the transporters. And that benefit is the additional benefits. Ilav time is the Magmu Tara, or mostly Gabayu, of Yasur. The Bishar al Va'ash Alicha, Ayu Torchim Lehem Bechazara. Because otherwise, it would look like the benefit they're garnering from the loan on the way there, they're paying them back with doing it for free on the way back, which is deemed interest, because they lent them the money. So therefore, Tosafot says, the reason you need to offset the transport costs on the way back is so it's not deemed interest. That's done by the discounts that they get in the new location or the fact that they're known as merchants in that location, what we discussed in the Gemara. That offsets the free transport in return. And the achrayut remains with the original buyer all the way through. And the loan is the fact that they can use the capital right away. Rashi, on the other hand, says that for that consideration, they're willing to undertake all responsibilities for the wheat. Again, it's a big chiddush in Rashi. Tosafot is very upset about it, especially since Rashi himself, back on Samachay Amud Aleph, indicated that it doesn't work unless Rav Chama kept responsibility for the item. Now, just to note, the Rambam explains the case a little differently, which is that they were transporting the stuff back for free, and the money that was being lent here was not to buy the materials, but rather to give them working capital in the location that they returned to. As soon as they came back, they weren't able to sell it immediately. And since they weren't able to sell it immediately, the Baal HaBayit forwarded them cash so that they could liquidate immediately. And that working capital that they give them, they would discount the price for the working capital. So that is Schar Amta Ma'ot. So was it not for the fact that that money would garner them other benefits, then it would be a sur, because they're for the working capital, they're giving them a discount in price, which means that they're basically charging them interest for giving them cash immediately. That's just the Rambam's explanation of the case. It's slightly different than the way that Rashi describes it over here. Now, the Tosafot points out that the Rabbeinu Hananel says that afilu shechirut hachamarim notein balabayit lechamarim. Then in our case here, the owners actually paid for the transportation costs. But once you do that, Tosafot says, what's the question? What's the problem anymore? If he's paying for the transportation costs, and he's taking responsibility, the balabayit, for the merchandise on the way back, then even though they're getting zero margin on the product, they're still getting reimbursed for their transportation costs. They're getting paid for doing that. If that's the case, then they're making their money there, and they're giving nothing for free to the balabayit. So Tosfot says, it has to be, mikoma komira demod deloyev schara malam. It has to be, when the Rabbeinu Hananel says that he gives them money, it's reimbursement of expenses, but it is not the cost of transportation, which means the charge that someone would have made above their expenses to transport over here. Because if they paid them in full, as if they were employees transporting, or they're paying them the transport costs, then it doesn't matter. He's earning a margin then, and then he's doing nothing for free, and he makes money on the hauling of the item. So he says it must be when their Rabbeinu Hananel means they get reimbursed, they're reimbursing them for the expenses, but giving them no schar, no margin. In that case, then they're doing everything for free. They're basically transporting, getting reimbursed for expenses. They make nothing. And they're buying it at the lower price, giving it to them at the lower price. They're making nothing there as well. There's no way that they would do something like that unless they got some benefit. And that's what the Gemara is saying. There is consideration because of the benefits that they garner in the new location. Gross says that the Muka Yosef says that they did get compensated fully, but in exchange for that, they took on the Achrayuta Derech. They became responsible for the item. So there was a trade-off in the Skara Malam, which is that they took on the Achrayut of the Derech, and that's why they got compensated there. So again, it's the equivalent of doing it for free, because even though he's paying them, and then they become responsible. So that's the consideration he's giving them, is for them becoming responsible. But had he not paid them that, they would not be responsible. If they're not responsible, then they're transporting for free. So the benefit is the fact that he's only paying them in exchange for the achrayut changing hands. He's not paying them for the real service of them transporting it or hauling it from one location to the other. Then what pushed Rabbeinu Hananel to say they're reimbursing expenses over here is, he says, because that small consideration of the fact that they give them the market prices in the new location, or that they show them where the cheaper stuff is, would not offset the costs of transportation. He says, "V'chinam dachak," says that it doesn't have to be that way. The hekilu chachamim beribit derabanan, because the whole problem here is ribit derabanan, and all the chachamim want is some small consideration which makes it look like there's an offset to the benefit that you're providing to the other party. So the Tosafot over here says it doesn't have to be a quid pro quo where there is some sort of equivalence between the consideration they're getting versus the expenses that they're undertaking. As long as there's something there, it's enough. Now that answer itself might undermine Tosafot's criticism of Rashi. Because, again, his criticism of Rashi is that why would they undertake achrayut like that for small consideration? Back with Rebbe Chama, they weren't willing to do it. Tosafot over here says, maybe you can do it. But then that question would then come up by Rav Chama, why couldn't they also over there not undertake the achrayut because of that consideration? And the answer is, there it was different. The achrayut changes when the loan goes outstanding. That makes a difference. Over here, the loan goes outstanding immediately. Whether they take achrayut or don't take achrayut, the loan is the money that they're giving them right away. Over there, Rav Chama, he was giving them merchandise to sell in the other location. So when it became a loan was important, because if he gave it to them and they became responsible right away, then it was a loan. If they only became responsible once they got to the new location, then it only became a loan then, and that avoided a lot of the problem. So it might be that the cases are different, but otherwise you have to say here that Tosafot requires a much closer relationship between the consideration and the cost or expenses undertaken by the individual in order to make it not like ribit. As Rashi sees a bigger discrepancy being allowed just because it's a vat ribit, the Rabbanan. Right, so now the Gemara says, my benayu, what is the difference or nafkamina between these two reasons? So, igbenayu tagra charato. The difference between them is a new merchant. So the way Rashi explains it over here is, a new merchant is not going to be well known to the other parties. And since he's not well known to the other parties, they're not going to know that he does this with no margin. Since he's not going to know that he does it with no margin, they're not going to discount the price to him because they won't believe him that he's getting no margin on this, and they won't give him the lower price. On the other hand, in terms of the cash that he's bringing, and he is considered to be a merchant, therefore they'll sell him other things, or they'll give him other trading opportunities. That would be true even on a new trader, because they want to get in business with him, and they'd like to work with someone who has cash. So that's the way Rashi distinguishes between them. The Ritva says, I think, just the opposite. Depending on how you explain the Mosli Gabayu and the Taro, you could explain it just the opposite way around, which is that before we said that they get a quantity discount, a bulk discount, versus the other case, which was that they show them where the cheaper stuff is. So in that case, the new merchant would still get the bulk discount because he's still buying in bulk, and therefore you'd be entitled to that discount. On the other hand, for them to show him where the merchandise is, that they wouldn't necessarily do because they don't know that he's a recurring buyer. He's come one time. Why would they show him the good stuff? They would show the good stuff to their regular buyers. So that's another way to make the nafka mina. As the Gra points out over here, the Rosh, and he thinks the Rambam, did not have this girsa because they bring both of these dinim down the halacha, which is they don't see them as being mutually exclusive reasons, but they see them as being both reasons for consideration and to say it's fine. And so therefore they see them as complementing each other rather than suggesting that there's a halachic nafkamina between these different reasons, and they paskin halacha like both of the reasons. Right now the Gemara says, Besura azle arba'a arba'a. In Sura you could buy four sa'ah for a sela, whereas Bekafre, which is another location, azlin shita shita. Over there you could buy six sa'ah for a sela. Yohiv Rav Zuzeh Lechamre. So Rav gave money to the haulers. Vikabel Alei Unsa De'Urcha. And he accepted the responsibility for anything that happens to the merchandise on the way. V'shaka Minayu Chamsho. And he took from them five at that price. So the way that he did the business is he allows the Chamarim to make some money, and he also makes some money from the transport. He gives them cash up front to go buy it in the new location. He's buying it at five sa'ah to the sela, even though in the location where he is, you can only buy it at four to the sela, he's buying it at a discounted price of five to the sela. So in location, the chamarim go there, they buy it at six to the sela, so they are giving one of those extra sa'ah to Rav, and keeping one of those extra sa'ah for themselves, for which they can make money. Where it says, v'nishko shita, he should be entitled to take six. Based on the previous Gemara, Rav doesn't have to let them have any margin here. They have the benefit, once he's given the cash, of either Migalulahu Tara or Mosli Gabayu. They have some consideration. And if Rav doesn't have to give them any margin, he could simply take it at a flat price, and they'll get the benefit from the fact that they are buying or using his cash, whatever the benefit is that they get, we spoke about before, that consideration would be enough. Mar says, Adum Choshuv Shiny. When you're dealing with someone of Rav's stature, it is different, because it's not right for him just to rely on that small consideration in order to deem it not to be interest. People will see what he's doing, and it looks like he's lending them money, and for that loan, he's getting back the benefit of them transporting it for him at no cost. And so people will think that it's okay to do that, even though we know the reason that it's okay is because they're gaining or garnering other benefits, like Mosli Gabayu or Migluluhu Taro. Nevertheless, that's not obvious to the people that are looking, or they don't understand that. And therefore, Rav made it optically clear that the transporters are also making money here, and therefore it's not solely to his benefit. When they transport it for free, they're willing to do it because they're going to gain a sa'ah, and not only is Rav going to gain a sa'ah. And so therefore he's saying there's margin in it for me, there's margin in it for them, and then it's obvious why he's allowed to do it, because it's not nechzei k'ribit. So even though technically, from the letter of the law, it would have been permissible for Rav to even take the six sa'ah fully for the sela, and they give no margin to the haulers. Nevertheless, from an optical standpoint, given his stature, it was important that he demonstrate that you have to do something that they get consideration. So he made it obvious that they were gaining something from this by giving them one of the two sa'ah that he was profiting from, taking it from the cheaper place to the more expensive place. Okay, next case is, by me neighbor Vasim Rabbi Yochanan. Ma'ulasot begrutaot kain. So Rabbi Asi asks Rabbi Yochanan, can you do this same deal? Here we've been talking about produce until this point in time. Can you do this with other merchandise? Or is this unique to produce? For instance, what about chips of gold or pieces of gold? Can you do this deal in the same way, which is that you buy it at the cheaper price in the other location, person transports it back to you for free, and gives it to you at that other price. He makes nothing on this sale, except for the fact that he'll get the same benefits that the other haulers got, which was Miglu Hutara or Mosli Gabayim. Amalei, Bikesh Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi lasot kein, b'klei pishtan. He wanted to do it b'klei pishtan, with clothing, linen clothing. He wanted to make such an arrangement. V'lo nichu Rabbi. And Rabbi did not allow him to do it. Some say it was the other way around. Because Rabbi lasot b'grutot kein, Rabbi wanted to enter into a business transaction like that with chips of gold. V'lo nichu Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi did not allow it. Now the difference being between this case and the case before is a frequent trade or frequent traffic in these items. So the whole benefit or consideration that the individuals who were hauling the produce got was from the fact that this is a recurring business. This is something that happens over and over again. Plus, not only did you transport it for these individuals, you can transport it for other people. There is a market that is wide and deep in these areas. And so therefore, it's worth it to them to do it all for free because of the other benefits that they garner in this trading. But if you're talking about klei pishtan or gold, which are, we call them one-off items, in that case, it's not worth it to them. Because when they do it one time, doesn't mean they're going to garner the benefits and they have no future benefit from it because they're not going to be going back again and again. So the fact that it is an item that is less trafficked makes it that it is less beneficial. The consideration that we're getting is very little, and so therefore they wouldn't do it. Or if they're doing it, they're only doing it because you're giving them the money up front, and that means that it's deemed like interest or looks like interest because they're giving you this benefit. So the fact that, first of all, it's an uncommon type of item to be trafficked in, and number two is it's probably an item where the price is not well known. And so therefore, making agreements about price is also difficult because of the fact that you may not get the price that you think. In produce, the prices are well known and the shire gets out. And again, these are deep markets where you can figure out the pricing and it makes sense. So for those reasons, you can't do this transaction. You can't do this when you're dealing with items that are not highly trafficked or recurring types of transactions. Pardesa. We're dealing with a vineyard. This is an interesting case because it came up back on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. Tosafot up there discussed it in depth because of the stira between this Gemara and the Gemara back on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. We mentioned it when we learned the Gemara over there. If you remember, that was the case where he's buying the zlat. He's buying the gourd in the field when it's small, and he's only taking delivery of it when it gets bigger. And the question was, were you allowed to enter into such a transaction? The first Lashon and Rava says you're not allowed to enter into such a transaction. The second Lashon and Rava says you are allowed to enter into a transaction like that. The question is here, we have a machloket Rav and Shmuel. How do Rav and Shmuel's opinions over here fit with that Gemara on Daf Samach Dalet Amud Aleph? So Pardes, according to most, is the case where he buys up front delivery of the wine in the back end. He comes to a vineyard, and he says, look, I'll pay you today for such and such or this number of bottles of wine in the end. Or he possibly comes and says, I'll pay you for all the wine produced by this vineyard. So he's paying up front for delivery of whatever it produces in the back end. Now, obviously, he's going to get a discount for doing such. And that discount is the problem because he's handing him cash today. That cash is, in essence, is a loan because he's not taking delivery of the product till after the harvest, till after the wine is totally made. And he's getting a discounted price for handing the cash today, which in essence means he's getting effectively interest or looks like interest on the transaction because he's getting the cheaper price for discounting up front. Rav says you cannot enter such a transaction. Ushmuel Shari. And Shmuel says it is mutar. Rav says it's a sword that came into the Kamei Shavya Tvei, since in the future it will be worth more. Mitchazek Yagar Natarle. It looks like he's paying him interest for delay of delivery, or in essence for the prepayment on the final produce. He's giving him interest by discounting the price. Shmuel Shari, Shmuel says it's mutar, came into Havi Beit Yua, lo mechse ki atar natale. There is risk borne by the individuals buying here, which is that something could go bad. You could have something happen to the grapes. You could have drought. You could have some sort of hailstorm, something that ruins all the grapes, and therefore you're going to get very little in the back end. Or even the wine that is produced could be of lower quality, and you may not be getting what you think. So his payment up front is an undertaking of risk. It's a bidirectional risk, which is he could benefit because he's getting it at a cheaper price, but he could also lose here because of the fact that it is possible to lose the crop or lose the wine that is being produced here. And therefore Shmuel says it is fine. If you look here, Rashi says here that the case is Shein Boser Osmadar. The case here is where the fruits have already emerged. Tosfot says that according to Rav, who says over here that it's a sur by the Pardes, why does he say over there by the Chalav or the Yizidim Chalav that it is Mutar? So Tosfot gave a number of reasons back there. One reason was, over there, the delivery is in a very short window. And so therefore, the discount garnered for waiting a day or two is almost nothing, and therefore it doesn't look like interest. Over here, where he's buying so early in the process, he gets a significant discount because of the amount of time between the time he purchases it and delivery. Therefore, it's a significant discount. And so therefore, the Rav says by the Pardesa, it's a sur because of the level of discount that is given. Versus by the case of the Chalav, where there's almost no discount, or maybe no discount at all, because it's a very short wait. You'll get it today, you'll get it tomorrow, that's fine. The other thing is that Rav says that in terms of Tiyua, that Rav doesn't believe that that is Shchiach. Rav does not worry about the Tiyua, because he says it's not common. It's not common to lose the whole grape harvest. It's not common to have bad wine come out of this. And since that's not a common occurrence, he doesn't think that's enough to be designated or considered a risk undertaking to make it that it is mutar. Okay, so then another read to explain. The other possibility is that Rav, in that case, only made it asur when you define how much wine you're going to produce from the field. Because that's the equivalent in a case back on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph where he promises him a certain quantity of milk from the A's, from the goat, there we said it was asur as well. So the case where it's mutar over here by the case on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph is a case where you don't specify the amount. You say you buy whatever comes out of the animal for the next day, that's fine. But where you specify the amount, it's problematic. So Tosfot then says that in our case over here, it's a case where he specified the amount. But if he sold the wine based on that, no matter what it produced, even Rav would say it's mutar. That's what the Balei Tosfot say. And Shmuel says it's mutar, even though he's promising a fixed output, because of tiyua. Tiyua means that even though he'll give him the fixed quantity, the quality of the wine might not be good. And so even though he's promising a fixed quantity, there's still a quality risk that he's undertaking, and that's enough risk to deem it that it's not interest. But none of the other Rishonim agree with that understanding. Now, according to the Ikad Amri over here, that Rava says it is mutar, what is the difference? He says, "Memela karabu atya afilo libidrab." Over here, it works by the gourd because the gourd grows by itself. You don't have to put a lot of effort into it; it'll grow by itself. Avagav hatam nami memela karve. But over there, also the grapes grow by themselves. Why is it a problem? Ikalukme dahatam mari pradesuk sholiyatsa dina preklau. Case there is a case where the fruits did not emerge yet, and therefore you can't just say it's going to grow by itself. Rashi specifically said in our case that it was a case where the fruits had already emerged and he was selling it. So for Rashi, how do you reconcile that problem? Grua brings from the Magid Mishnah that Kushiyat Tosfot Teretz the Magid Mishnah Meshum De'ein Derech Limkor Perot Pardes Kach. People don't normally sell a Pardes in that way. Since they don't normally sell it that way, it becomes a significant discount because he's doing something that people won't do, and therefore the discount is steep. Versus the gourd, where the discount is not steep. Or the other way to explain it is that the gourd will grow by itself without significant input or work done to it. So then the grapes in the Pardes need a significant amount of work to continue growing properly and to get to their fruition. And so the other Rishonim who disagree with Tosfot will say, yes, the pre was already emerged over there, but either people don't normally sell wine forward like that, or there's a significant amount of input you have to make between now and then for it to work. So for both of those reasons, Rav says it's asur over there, but over here we'll say it's mutar by the delat because of the fact that the delat grows by itself or does not require a lot of work for it to come to fruition. Whereas the Balei Tosfot say that the difference is here the fruit's already emerged, and over there by the pardes the fruit has yet to emerge. And so that solves the problem of the steer between here and there. Between why by the A's, when you milk the animal for whatever it produces, it's fine. But over here, Rav says it's a sur. So Tos would give us reasons why there might be a difference. Either because the discount is very steep, or because of the fact that Rav says over here, we're talking about a fixed production by the Pardes and not over there. And we also explained why, by the case of the Dalat, Rav says it's mutar over there by the Dalat and asur over here because the fruits had already emerged by the Dalat, not over here. And then the other Rishonim would describe the difference between Pardes and Dalat to explain why Rav would say it's asur over here and Rava would say it's mutar by the case of the Dalat. Now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav Shimi Barchia, Umodi Rav Vitore de Nafish Psedayu. The Rav agrees by Shvarim, where there is a lot of loss in a case where the forward buying is done in a place where they also have to harvest it and use the shvarim for the harvest, and the individual is going to provide those shvarim, then that it's mutar, because then the discount price that he is getting up now is because he's also going to have huge depreciation in his shvarim that he works later on. And so therefore the discount is really compensation for the fact that this buyer is going to bring in the wagons and the shvarim to harvest, and he's going to lose money on his shvarim that get injured while they're working in the field. And for that reason, it's considered to be not interest, or a discount is not a problem, because the discount's paying for that which the shvarim are going to be damaged or depreciated later on. And that's what Rashi brings over here, the nafish psadayu, which is that they get broken up or hurt by the branches and scraped up by the work that they do inside of the pardes. And if you remember over here, the Bach points you back to Lamed Amud Aleph, that back there, the Gemara says that if Yutomim want to lose their money, that one of the items they should do is they should hire workers to work with the Shvarim and not watch over them. Because the workers can do a lot of damage both to the vineyard when they put the Shvarim through it, as well as damage to the animals themselves get scraped up on the trees. So Rashi is saying the same thing over here, that Nafish Sadayu makes it that entering to such a transaction is not interest, or a discount is not a problem, because the discount's paying for that which the shvarim are going to be damaged or depreciated later on. Now, the Rabbeinu Chananel was gores, not tore, but tavre. And this would separate it from the previous case, which is perish mochera galim ktanim viladot edro asher yuldulo b'shana zot. He sells forward the calves that will be born in the next year. So there, Rav will agree, because there's enough risk that's being undertaken here by the person who's putting his money up front. Because there's a lot of chances of miscarriages, there's chances that they won't give birth to calves, the calves won't be healthy. Whatever the reasons are, it's significant enough risk that it's considered to be an equity investment and not a loan, because he has risk in both directions. The Rambam takes it a different step and says that, like the Rabbeinu Chananel is talking about young agalim, but he's giving him a young calf to bring up and fatten up. And there also there's risk when he pays him the money up front for the cheaper price for the full-fledged cow, because the calves can die along the way. The calves cannot be healthy. There's enough risk there where it makes it okay to pay forward and get a discount, because the discount is because you're undertaking enough risk to make it a risky investment and not a certain outcome. So Rav, who says by the Pardesa it's not shchiach that there's a loss, or it's not significant enough a loss, by these cases, but that are described either by Rashi, Rabbeinu Chananel, or the Rambam, there is enough loss to make it that we consider it to be a transaction with risk rather than a loan without risk. Amalo Shmuel, Ahano de Shibshe Shibsha. So Shmuel says to these individuals who are, according to Rashi, Shibshe Shibsha is Balabatim, Hamalvin Tvuala Risim the Zera, Mushalim Lehem Bagorin. The Rashi says the case is that they lend them seed to plant now, in order to get returned the seed in the harvest. So they hand them seeding materials so that the sharecroppers who are working here can plant. But then they give it back to them in the harvest, where obviously the seeds are worth a lot more. So afuchu ba'ara, they say to the balabatim, work the land a little bit, teheke de kana lechu gufu da'ara, so that you will have some possession in the item right away, because in that way, it becomes like yours. It is as if it's yours right away. And then when it grows and then is harvested, it all happened in your possession. Because ilo avilechu kalvav asur. Because if you don't do that, it becomes like a loan. And then it is deemed to be a sa'ab sa'ah. You're giving them a sa'ab seed today for a sa'ab seed later on. And very likely the price is going to appreciate, and that will be problematic. Now, Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation that the shibshi here is referring to seed, because he says shibshi in the Gemara never means refers to seed. Rather, shibshi refers to zmurot, to wood. And the case here is a case where Rabbeinu Chananel Peirish, not name ma'ot, but bala zmurot, bekach, bekach, hamasui. They prepay for the wood that will come out of the kerem. When you actually prune the vineyards and the wood is available, it's much more expensive. So what they're doing is they're buying up front the wood and they're getting it at a cheaper price. And there, leka tiyuab is murot. There you can't say that there's risk in this murot that they're going to go bad because of the fact that wood is wood. And so therefore the discounted price that they're giving to them is problematic. And so what you have to do is you have to go into the field and work the field a little bit so you get possession of the wood or the zmurot right away. And then that way it's a forward sale where you're taking ownership rather than a loan where you're only getting a forward delivery in the future. And so in order to avoid that problem, they went and worked the field in order to do that. Others suggest that there is enough risk. The risk undertaken here is the fact that we don't know how much they're going to prune later on. And so they didn't purchase a fixed quantity, but they purchased whatever the vineyard will produce in terms of the prunings. And since there's uncertainty in the prunings, therefore it was considered to be problematic. And so what you have to do is you have to go into the field and work the field a little bit so you get possession of the wood or the zmurot right away. Even though the kinyan is on a davar shenu mitsuyam, it's not on a particular item, but that is overcome by the fact that working the field gets you through the karka possession and whatever in the end is chosen to be the prunings that will be taken out of the field. So Amar Lahu Rava, Lahanu de Mantere Bage, Rava said to these individuals who are guards or guardians of the fields while the wheat was growing in the fields, Poku hafoku bebe dari. Go out and do some work at the threshing floor. Make sure that you're not getting paid or your wages are not due until that point in time. Because schirut is only paid, as we know, we mentioned this before, at the conclusion of the work that is being done. And if they're giving it to you then, they're just doing it at a discount. The problem that Rava was trying to solve was that these individuals who guarded the fields and took care of the wheat, they were only paid after the processing of the wheat, and they had finished threshing and taking care of all the wheat. That means that there was a delay in their wage payment. They should have been due their wages as soon as they harvested the field because they're done guarding the fields. But instead, they waited, and then they gave them some sort of profit sharing where they got a portion of the wheat that was harvested, but they got that at a discounted rate to the market. So the problem was that if their salaries came due immediately upon the harvest, and then they waited to get their payment until later, when the Baal HaBayit at that point gave them wheat in lieu of their payment of wages, but he gave it to them at a discounted price, in essence what he's doing is he's paying them more because of the fact that they waited to get their salary. And since there was a debt outstanding from when their salary came due until that point in time, v'hamtanat ma'ot, for waiting for their money, they're getting paid extra, and that's interest. So what Rava suggests they do is do a little bit of work, get involved in the threshing floor a little bit so that your work continues, meaning that your salary has not come due until after the threshing, because you're a part of your job description. It's not only to guard the fields, but you're also doing some work with the threshing as well. And in that way, your salary doesn't come due until after the threshing is completed. At that point in time, when they give you more than the market rate, mozilu gabaychu, they're simply giving you a discounted price. They're not doing it because you waited to get your money, because your money wasn't due until that point in time. So Rava suggests that they get involved a little bit with the processing of the wheat in order to postpone the due date or the due time of their wages so that it becomes a discounted sale to them rather than compensation for waiting to get their wages until that point in time. Amarei Rabbanan the Rava, ka'achil ma'ribit. Rava, you are benefiting, or the way that the term in the Torah is used, it, you're eating ribit. You are garnering interest in this manner. Tekuli ama shakle arba'a, because everybody else takes payment from the sharecropper. Here it's not a percentage sharecropper, but rather a fixed price sharecropper, where he pays 4 kurim, for the use of the field per year. So everybody else takes 4 kurim from the individual. And then they dismiss the sharecropper in Nisan. They say that your work is done. and he pays you, and they take their payment then. Mar, nataluhu ad iyar, meaning a month later, b'shakel shita, and then you demand payment for them of 6 kurim instead of 4 kurim. Amaluhu, he said back to them, atun kavidatun shalokidin. You guys are acting inappropriately. Ara laris mishtabed. Once a sharecropper takes on the obligation of working the field becomes mishubat to him, in essence becomes his, it's his first lien. Iyatun misalkitu luhu b'nisan. If you dismiss them in Nisan, mafsaditu luhu b'kamo. Then you are causing them a loss because the grain is not fully matured or fully developed, and therefore they're unable to harvest the full field because there are still things that are not completely mature. I, on the other hand, ana natanu luhu ad iyar, I wait until a iyar where the entire field is fully matured, mervachnu luhu b'kamo, and therefore I benefit them or they profit because they're able to harvest more or take more off the field. So I'm not doing anything wrong. Number one, by waiting to have them pay me until Iyar instead of Nisan. And the fact that I'm charging them more is not because I give them an extra month to pay me, therefore I'm demanding more price back, but rather I am giving them more profitability in the field. And they're paying me for that higher profitability. You who throw them off, or everybody else who throws them off in Nisan, limits their profitability. And therefore they can only demand 4 kurim. I, on the other hand, who let them work the field through Iyar, they gain much more profitability, and therefore they're paying me the 6 kurim for that additional profitability. And it's not a problem of interest. Rav Mari bar Rachel, Rashi mentions that Rav Mari bar Rachel was Bat Shmuel Havo, that Rachel was the daughter of Shmuel, and Rav Mari is known as the son of Rachel rather than his father, is because she was taken into captivity, and then she married her captor who was not Jewish. He eventually converted, but the conception of Mari bar Rachel was while he was still not Jewish before he converted, but he converted before he was born. So that's what the Rashi says, Horata shelo b'kdusha, u'machmat kvodo t'lo al shem imo. And because of his kavod, they connected him to his mother, who was fully Jewish, and was the daughter of Shmuel. So that was his yichus, rather than to his father, who was known as Isur Giyura. So that's what Rashi says, why he's called Rav Mari bar Rachel. The Tosafot point out that Rav Mari bar Rachel appears in two different places in Shas. One as the grandson of Shmuel, the son of the daughter of Shmuel, Rachel. On the other hand, there's also a Rami bar Rachel, who is the son of Rabba. And Tosafot over here says that the one we're speaking about here is a contemporary of Rava, as we're going to see from the story. That more likely makes him a grandson of Shmuel rather than the son of Rabba. So Rami bar Rachel, Mashkin lei haunachri beito. Rami bar Rachel had lent money to this non-Jew. And as collateral, the non-Jew had given a house to Rami bar Rachel, hadar zavno de Rava. Then the non-Jew sold the house to Rava. So unbeknownst to Rava, Rami bar Rachel already had the house as collateral, had a lien on it, and despite that fact, he sold it to Rava. Notar treser yarchei shato. He waited 12 months. Shagal akar beita. At that point, he took the rental income from the house, whether Rami bar Rachel himself was living there, and therefore he was paying rent for his own living there, or whether he had rented it out to someone else. Either way, amatile the Rava. He then brought the rental income to Rava. Amarle, and he explained why for the first 12 months, he did not pay Rava. Hai delo amate lamar agar beit adidna. The reason I didn't bring you the rental income until this point in time, because now you own the property, you bought it, is because the stamashkanta sha'ata, that the default status of a mashkon, at least in their laws, is for a minimum of a year. And so therefore, for the first year, I was entitled to stay in this location or in this house for free. Or if I rented it out, the rental income came to me, because they view it as if it is a mecher during that period of time for that year, and I have 5 full rights of usability during that time. So for the first year, I did not pay you, because even if the nachri came back to repay the loan, he wouldn't have able to remove me from the mashkon, because in their laws, you get the rights to the mashkon for a year, and then only after that does the borrower have a right to repay and redeem the property that he'd given as a mashkon. Now, hashta lishkomar agar beita. But at this point, now that the year has elapsed, and you have paid for the property and it's yours now, I'm going to give you the rental income because that's what you deserve. It's no longer a mashkon because he sold it. And since he sold it, I'm going to pay you, and I'll have to get the debt back from the non-Jew. Tosafot over here asks, why is he paying him at the beginning of the second year? We just learned that ain't schirut mishtalemet ala basof, that you only pay rent at the end of the period. So Tosafot gives 2 possibilities. Either this was a month-to-month rental, and therefore he paid it every month, or it's a case where he's really coming into after the second year, going into the third year, and he waited 12 months, was 12 months after the elapsement of the first year. At the end of the second year, he's come to pay him for the previous year, the 12 months that just elapsed. So Amalei, Yehoi Yadana Adava Mushkan Le'edamar, had I known that this was encumbered, it was collateralized to you for your loan, I would never have purchased it because I wouldn't have wanted to hurt your ability to collect the loan. Hashta kidinihem avdinan lecha. Therefore, according to their dinim, I'm going to treat you. Until the loan is repaid, you don't get the value or the income from the property. So ananami lo shakil minach agar beita de misalke lech bezuzay. Therefore, I'm not going to collect rent on the property until you get the repayment of your loan. Because in their laws, until the repayment of the loan is made, the mashkon remains as a sale in the hands of the person who's holding that collateral. So I'm going to treat you that way, and you can stay in the property. Now, as Rashi notes over here, vein zu ribit. It's not considered ribit, the fact that Rami Baruchel remains in the property with the outstanding loan. Because as far as Rova and Rami Baruchel, they have no obligations to each other. Rova didn't borrow the money from Rami Baruchel. The outstanding loan is with the Nachri. So now when he does this quote-unquote favor for Rami Baruchel and doesn't charge him rent, that's a benefit or matana from Rova to Rami Baruchel, disconnected from the fact that he had lent money to the Nachri. And so therefore it's not deemed to be interest, and it's not a problem for him to waive his right to the rental income. And so therefore, Rami Baruchel wanted to pay him the rental income now, because until this point, it belonged to him. Now, had the goy come and paid the money, it would no longer belong to him. And he sold that right to Rova. So now Rova really owns the property. And so Rami Baruchel says, I have to pay you rental income. I have a separate outstanding issue with the Nachri. Rova says, no, I'm going to treat you like they would have under their dinim, which means that until money is paid or the loan is discharged, you cannot take the collateral back. And so the collateral will remain in your hands, and I will garner no income from it until the goy pays you back, the Nachri pays you back. So in the first year where Rami Baruchel could have refused the Nachri's redeeming the land, he can also refuse Rova's rights to the land, and therefore he kept it rent-free, or he took the rental income from it. In the second year where the Nachri had the right to redeem the collateral, so when Rova bought it, he got that right by giving the money to the Nachri, and in essence, he redeemed the collateral. And now really, Rami Baruchel needs to get the cash from the Nachri to repay the loan, because he monetized the collateral. But as far as Rova is concerned, Rami Baruchel believes now it's Rova's now and he has to pay income. Rova feels uncomfortable taking the income from him because he now, in essence, undermined Rami Baruchel's collateral by buying it. And therefore he says to him, you should stay there and don't pay me income until the goy pays you back, like under their rules. And it won't be deemed as interest, as Rashi notes over here, because of the fact that there's no connection between the borrower and the person providing the favor for Rami Baruchel. Or you have to say that under their rules, the way it works is that the collateral is viewed as a sale to the lender, and then it's viewed as a repurchase, or he has a repurchase option to buy back the collateral when he shows up with the money. For the first year, he doesn't have a right to do that. After that point, he has a right to do it. And therefore, it's in the hands of Rami Baruchel as a mecher, as a sale, and therefore, when Rova gives him benefits for that, again, it's not rebeat on the land, because in essence, Rami Baruchel really owns the mashkon until it's redeemed or freed by the Nachri when he pays back the loan. Once it's freed, then it would go to Rova because he is the purchaser of that right once it's freed from the encumberment of Rami Baruchel. And that's what Tosfot explains, that Rami Baruchel thought in the Havamina that it was a problem of interest payment since Rova had bought it. And therefore, Rova becomes now like the lender, or steps into the shoes of the lender. Rova retorts to him and says, no, even if I step into the shoes of the lender, I'm no better than the lender. And just like the lender himself, it would not be a problem for you to retain the land under their laws and use it. So too, now that I'm the owner of the land, it shouldn't make a difference. Or even if you say I step into his shoes, my rights don't exceed the rights of the Nachri before. And the rights of the Nachri were not to throw you off the property. You got to keep the property and utilize it. And therefore, you should remain on the property. Now, the reason that Rova did not want to buy the property is either because it undermined Rami Baruchel's lien or collateral vis-a-vis the Nachri. Though Tosfot speculates that there could have been an issue of Bar Metzra. That we saw before, that Mashkon comes from the word Shachein or Shchuna, which means that the person holding the collateral has the first right of refusal to buy the property, as if they're the Bar Metzra, as if they are the field bordering this field, which we'll see in Bava Batra and later on the Masechta, that you have a right to buy your neighbor's field at first right of refusal. So therefore, Rami bar Rachel should have been given the first opportunity to buy it, and the fact that Rava brought it was problematic. The Baal Tosfot in the end said it must be that Rami bar Rachel wasn't interested in purchasing the property at all, and therefore he wasn't in violation of the din of bar mitzra. He was just doing it mitzad midat chassidut, and he felt it was inappropriate because he shouldn't be buying it while it's still collateralized to Rami bar Rachel. So Amar le Rava bar Nish le Ravashi, Chazi mai Rabbanan dekach le Rebita? Do you see that the Rabbanan are making these investments that is a problem of a vakribit? They put down money in Tishrei to buy wine, and then mivcharei la betevet, and then they choose which barrels are the best of the wine in the wintertime. So they're paying for future delivery, and in that future delivery, they're taking the best quality stuff. So up front, they're paying for the wine, and then in the back end, they're taking no risk because they're only taking the good wine that comes out from what they purchased, a discounted purchase price. And it's a time period, shelo yatza ashar, that the market price is not well known or deep yet, and therefore they're buying it at a discount for giving the money up front, and that discount then allows them to take the good wine in the back end. So in the end, they're getting a discount and then getting delivered wine in the back end without taking any risk. Wait a minute, the reason that is because when they buy wine, they're not buying vinegar. And so then when they take wine in the back end, that's exactly what they bought. They had no intentions of buying vinegar. Because mi'ikara de chamra, chamra, from the outset, whatever is going to be wine is wine. De chala, chala, and whatever is going to be vinegar is a vinegar. Ha'ishatahu de kamavchare. And at that moment is when the choice is made. So what Ravashi answers him is, when it comes to vinegar, it's different. Because vinegar is already present in the wine, or the tendency for it to turn into vinegar is already present there in Tishrei. It might not be discernible yet, but whatever is going to turn into vinegar has already started that process in Tishrei. And therefore, the reason that when they buy it in Tishrei, they take delivery in Tevet and they only accept wine and not vinegar is because they bought wine and not vinegar. And the vinegar that was there in Tevet was already present from Tishrei, and that means that it was a mekach taut. Had they put their money down on that barrel, it was known to be vinegar at that time. Not discernible, but it already had the underlying properties become vinegar because of its chemical makeup or whatever's happening with the wine. And therefore, it was a mekach taot. And so the reason that their money only goes towards the wine is because at the moment in Tishrei when they buy it, they're only buying the wine barrels and not the vinegar barrels because that distinction is already there, even though maybe we can't tell that it's there. Therefore, in Tevet, when they take delivery, they only take delivery of wine and not vinegar, because they never accepted vinegar in the first place. Had they just bought a barrel and then accepted whatever it is, that's right, then they would have to accept it whether it was wine or vinegar. But the fact that vinegar is already present, and they specifically are buying wine in Tishrei, that makes it a mekach taot, and therefore their purchase is solely focused on the purchase of wine, and not on the purchase of vinegar. Rashi says it's not similar to the case that we saw in Ayin Bet Amud Bet, where the person has it in possession and can say then he can sell the wheat forward for delivery if he has the wheat in possession, because Shayayin Ragil Achmitz. Because that is a very commonplace thing, that wine turns to vinegar. B'shema Kulo Achmitz. And maybe the entirety of it became Chometz. And therefore the supplier is taking way too much risk over here, because he's responsible only to put in wine in the end and not vinegar. And Rashi said something similar back on Samach Dalet Amud Bet, Rachokta have said, that he says that because the seller accepted upon himself the responsibility for takfa, hechmitz, that made it that it was karov, lischar, and Rachok may have said, because he accepts all the responsibility for the wine turning into vinegar, then the person who's buying it has almost no risk left or embedded in the transaction. And therefore it'll be deemed a loan and not an equity transaction. And therefore, Tosfot back on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph says that if the individual was to only accept the market fluctuation risk and not the risk of it becoming vinegar, since it's so commonplace that chimutz is shchiach, it would have been a problematic transaction. If it were not for what Ravashi said over here, that it really turns out to be a mekach taot and not simply a responsibility that is placed on the supplier. Had it been that the vinegar would not be determined or doesn't happen until much later, then it would be a problematic transaction because the supplier is taking on too much risk and the buyer is taking on too little risk, and therefore it's karov the schar and rachok may have said, and it would be deemed to be a loan. Therefore, we say that the reason it works over here, even though those are the dynamics, is because the vinegar was already apparent in Tishrei. And that means that the division of what they bought was already done in Tishrei, even though they're only picking the barrels in Tevet when they can see which one is vinegar and which one is wine. That was already known in Tishrei. Since it was known in Tishrei, they purchased the wine barrels and not the vinegar barrels. Later on, we'll determine which of those are the wine and which one are the vinegar, but they only put their money down on the wine, and that's why the transaction is permitted. Ravina Vayevzuze the Vnei Akra Dishanvato. Ravina used to pay money up front for future delivery of wine. He used to do it with the people. Rashi says here, Shanvata is Shemanar, and Akra means the fortress or the area that people lived on next to the river of Shanvata. So he used to purchase for delivery wine from them. When it came time for him to go get his wine, Vishafile Tve Kufita, they used to, without any prior agreement, or without this being a part of their transaction, they used to give him an extra pitcher or barrel of wine. After the command of Ravashi, Amalei, Mishori. He went to Ravashi and asked him, is it okay that the transaction is going this? It's not embedded in the transaction. I'm not demanding that they do it. They're just doing it. Amalei, in. Achulehu de kamachle gabech. They are just forgiving it to you. They're giving it to you as a matana, but they're not paying it because of the hamtanat ma'ot. So Rashi explains, hoyo, velo pasakte ma'am, since it wasn't part of the transaction, minatam notrim lecha, they're giving it to you. Now the problem with that is, isn't that called ribit meucheret, which we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayot, that even if you pay after the loan is completed or after you paid it off, that fact that you give it in addition to the repayment of the loan makes it as if it is ribit. And that's what Tosfot asks. Ein ze ribit meucheret. This isn't considered to be ribit meucheret, shlo ayum maskirim shnotnim b'shvil ma'utav. Because they didn't specifically articulate that they were giving it because he gave them the prepayment. Shubatilim etzlam, the perish bakuntris, as Rashi explains. So therefore, it's not deemed to be ribit mulcheret unless you articulate that it's specifically connected to the loan, and that's why the mechila works over here. Others explain that the reason it's not a problem is because it is done derech mecher, not derech halva'a. Since there was no halva'a over here, and it's only a vak ribit, the fact that they gave it to him without articulating what it is, that suffices to make it that it's not deemed to be a vak ribit or problematic over here. On the other hand, the Ravid explains that the problem here is not the ribit problem, but rather Ravina was worried about the gezel problem, which is the fact that these individuals were working on behalf of other field owners. And then when they gave Ravina the extra amount, did they have the right to give that extra amount to Ravina in a situation in which they're not the balim of the item? And then the answer could be either that Ravashi didn't understand what Ravina was asking, or he's saying, achule kach machle lach, that they were forgiving it to you, which might be the din, which is that when a, for instance, cashier works in a store and they don't own the place, and someone comes up, there isn't enough money, or they're missing a small amount of money, and they say, oh, don't worry about it, you don't have to pay for it, you don't have to do this. Do they have a right to act in that manner if they're not the balim of the store? So the answer might be, and what Ravashi answers them, is that when these people work on behalf of the balabayit or the balasadeh, he wants them to act in a way that engenders the consumers to be happy, and what would be normal protocol in these situations. And so therefore, they are empowered up to a point to forgive paying on certain things, to make certain concessions to the customers, because of the fact that they're really acting as proxies for the balim. And so that might be the answer to this question, is achule machle. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that there was no prepayment here whatsoever, and he actually was paying them at the time. And the question that he was asking was, when they put in the extra amount, when I pay on time, was that a mistake, or is that a gift? Amalei, ha'ara lavdiduhi, says, wait a minute, the land doesn't belong to them, so how do they have a right to do this? Amalei, ara detaska mishabdo. The land belongs to the tax authorities, because as Rashi explains over here, these were lands that were abandoned by people who could not make the tax payments. So wealthy individuals used to go ahead and take over those lands and pay the taxes on behalf of the owners that had run away, and then they used to work the land. And so Ravina's problem was, maybe these individuals were stealing from the original owners, because the original owners can't have their land confiscated because karka ain't an exelet. If karka ain't an exelet, then when they're working it, they're really stealing from the original owners, and then I shouldn't be taking it or buying from them. So Ravashi responds to him, ara the taska mishabdo, that the land is encumbered to the tax authorities. Umalka amar, and dina de machuta dina is that the king says, mandiyav taska leichol ara, whoever pays the taxes, the land or the production of the land belongs to them. And therefore, you're following the protocol of Dina de Machuta Dina. If that's the case, then they own the land at this point in time. And you can buy from them, or you can take from them without any qualms. Amalei Rabbah, the Rava. So Rabbah says to Rava, Chazi Mar, Ani Rabbanon, Diave Zuze Akarga. Do you see these Rabbanon that are paying off the poll tax for these individuals? Omishabit Behutfei. And then they make them work for them for more than the value of the poll tax that they paid. Amalei, Hashta Iku Shchiva. Lo Amrei Luchu Hamilta. Says, had I passed away, nobody would have been able to tell you this. But now that I'm here, Hachi Amar Rav Sheshet. This is what Rav Sheshet says. Mahurukayu Dahani Betafsa Demalko Monach. The documentation of slavery is in the hands of the king. Mahurukayu, which Rashi calls Chotem Avdut Shelem, it is there. Insignia. In their day, they used to wear some sort of necklace or something around their neck that indicated that they were slaves. So that medallion or that emblem is kept with the king, and technically you are a slave to the king. And therefore, anybody who lives in this kingdom is really a servant of the king. And the king says that anybody who doesn't pay their poll tax then is subjugated to the individual who does pay their poll tax. And the king has a right to then demand whatever output or work that this individual does will go to the other party. So either the question of Rav Papa stemmed from the fact, was it a problem of Gezel to subjugate them? And then Rav Papa's answer is that this is Dina de Machuta Dina and it's fine. Or you can suggest, and this is the way Tosafot seems to read it, is that here there was a problem of rebate, possibly. Which is that they're basically forwarding the payment of the cargo of the poll tax on behalf of these individuals. Then these individuals would work and pay back the cargo to the individual paid on their behalf through the work that they procured to them. But then, after that point in time, if they continue to work for them, then that becomes rebate because basically it exceeds the value of the loan that they extended to them to pay for the poll tax. And so it was a question of rebate. The answer of Rava again is that it's Dina de Malchuta Dina. When you pay the poll tax, then that individual becomes subjugated, or the servant and the individual paid the poll tax. It's not a repayment of a loan, but rather it's Dina de Malchuta Dina that you belong to the king, and now you belong to this individual, because the king said that that's what happens. And their difference in opinion, as the Tosafot notes, might have to do with the girsa here, whether it says mishtabdei behu tfei or simply mishtabdei behu. Was the problem that they were enslaving them, or was the problem that they were enslaving them too much? Although Tosafot manages to explain it, even without the word tfei, as being a problem of rebit. And as the Gra notes over here, the Rambam sees the issue here as being an issue of iser heter, whether it was mutar lishtabed to subjugate them at all, which is a similar question in the subsequent sugya that the Gemara is about to discuss. Rav Sorim, Achua de Rava. Rav Sorim, who was the brother of Rav Avatakif Inche, Delo Malu. Amayaluhu, Begoharcha de Rava. So Rav Sorim used to go after these people or force these people of ill repute or anashim b'li'al, people that did not accept any authority, or individuals who wantonly violated Averot. You could possibly connect it to the sugi before and suggest these were people that were inappropriately dodging the poll tax, did not pay their poll tax. And then he used to put them in to basically carry the rickshaw of Rava. Rashi calls it Lashon Ashkenaz, right wagon. So it's some sort of wagon, but wagon made for people to ride in. And over here, these individuals were either pulling the wagon, or it was more like a rickshaw in which they carried Rava on this rickshaw. Amalei Rava, Shapir Kabat. You're doing the right thing here. The Tanina. Ra'ita she'eno no'eg kishura, minay shata rashay lishtabed bo. Someone does not act appropriately. If someone doesn't do what they're supposed to do, how do you know that you're allowed to then subjugate them? Tamalomar lo'olam bahem tavodu ube'achechem. That you have to eternally subjugate them. That's a din that is by an Eved Kanani. And over there, it says by the Eved Kanani that you're actually violation of an Isur if you let him out of his subjugation, because it says you must eternally or forever keep them in subjugation. The Pasuk then stops and it says, Ubachechem, your brethren, you may not do this too. But what Rava does is he reparses the Pasuk to have the word Achechem connect to Lo Olam Bahem Tavodu from before it in the Pasuk. Therefore he says, Lo Olam Bahem Tavodu Ubachechem, that your brethren are then subject also to the same requirement of subjugation. That's only if they act inappropriately. Yochol Afilu Noe Kishura, if they act appropriately, you would think maybe you could still subjugate them. Tamalomar, Ubachechem Bnei Yisrael Ish Bachiv Lo Dirdu Befarech. You're not allowed to work them hard, or you're not allowed to enslave your fellow Jew. So by reparsing the Pasuk, he says when they act inappropriately, you're allowed to subjugate them. When they act appropriately, then you're not allowed to. There's a restriction against subjugating them. And since these individuals were acting inappropriately, they were therefore Rav Zohim's brother was acting appropriately by putting them as part of this cabal of individuals who had to take care of Rava or carry Rava's wagon around. There's some that suggest that the problem here was the fact that it was a melacha bizayon, which is only appropriate for Nevi-Kanani and not for a Jew. So therefore, was this justified? And Rava answered, sometimes it's justified to do a melacha that's a bizayon to a Jew when they act inappropriately, because then they have the same status as a Nevi-Kanani. And that was the justification for utilizing him in this manner. Amar Rav Chama, Hai man deyoyv zuzeh lechavre, the mizban lechamra. This person gave money to his friend to purchase wine on his behalf. Upasha velo zavin le. And in the end, he was negligent and didn't purchase it on his behalf. Mishalim le ka azil afarta de zulshaf. So at the time of the harvest, he gave him money to purchase wine at that time at the cheaper price. And he was negligent and didn't buy him or didn't purchase the wine for him. Therefore, when it comes to the point of time where the wine should be delivered or he has to supply the wine, then he has to supply it based on the price at a parvata de Zulshaft, based on the port or the large wine market of Zulshaft, where there was plenty of wine or there was a large wine market. So wine was purchased there at a reasonable price. So he has to pay him back, or he has to get him wine at that price. Even if that price exceeds the price that was available before, still he has to do it because he was a posheya. And his negligence is what caused the problem over here. And now he's got to pay him back. Tosfot over here notes that in the Gemara in Bava Batra, it makes it sound like afarvata dezol shvat, that location was actually a place where the wine was expensive. So the Baya Tosfot said it actually sat in between an area where wine was very expensive and an area where wine was very cheap. And so therefore, relative to the areas that were expensive in wine, a farvato, the zoshvat, was cheap. Versus the areas where wine was very cheap, they would bring it to a farvato, the zoshvat, because there they could garner a higher price because it was more expensive than the places where wine was plentiful. So it's sad on that threshold between areas where wine was very high priced to areas where wine was very cheap. And so therefore, depending which side you came from, it either was cheaper over there or was more expensive over there, and that's why the traders came to that location to interact or trade the wine. So Amar Meimar, Amrito the Shemaita to Kamei de Rav Zvid Minarda. I said over this member of Rav Chama to Rav Zvid Minarda. Amar, ki kamar Rav Chama, he qualified that statement of Rav Chama and said that it was only true, Hani Mile Biyain Stam. That's when you asked him to buy generic wine. He said, then please buy me wine. And then if he is Posheya and is negligent in purchasing the wine, he has to replace it at then the going market price at the slightly cheaper location or at the large market where the wine is readily available, even if it's at a higher price then. But aval b'yayin zeh, if he specified which wine it is that he wanted, lo, then he does not have to replace the wine, even if he was a posheya, because when the person gave him the money, me'yemar d'mizavni le'nihalei, who said he would have been successful at acquiring the wine? When he specified what wine he wants, there was an embedded probability in him handing the money to the individual that it wouldn't be possible to purchase the wine, that there'd be nobody who would sell him that particular wine. And therefore, when he gave it to him, it wasn't certain that he was going to get the wine back anyway. So therefore, it's an asmachto, and therefore his entrance into this transaction or giving him the money was done unless a fake to start with. And therefore, it's not enforceable. And we can't have him pay the larger sum in the end if he doesn't procure the wine for him, because then it looks like rebeat. Even if he only had given the money to acquire generic wine, lo, he doesn't have to pay him if he is somehow negligent and doesn't buy it. He doesn't have to buy him the wine at the higher price at the later date. My taima, asmachtai, because that penalty, or the fact that he has to pay the higher price, is an asmachta. Asmachta lo kanya. And we paskin that an asmachta is not a form of kinyan that is enforceable. As Rashi notes over here, even if he explicitly states that if I don't buy it for you, I'll buy it at the future price and I will buy it at the higher price, still that is considered to be an asmachta because his intent or his mindset when he took the money for you was to buy it at the current price. The fact that now he failed to do so, he was never expecting to pay that penalty or he's never expecting to pay the higher price. And so therefore he never was mitchayev. He never obligated himself to pay the higher price, and there's no kinyan to enforce that he pay the higher price. And for that reason, he can walk away from this and not have to buy him the wine at the higher price. Now, this all assumes that the individual undertook to do this for free, and he didn't do anything else with the money in the interim, because he was doing him a favor anyway. And then if he doesn't do it, you have complaints against him. On the other hand, if he was hired specifically to do this, or he used the money for some other investment and garnered returns on it, then you can force him to disgorge his profits or to pay for the losses here because he was hired specifically in order to carry out this agency. And when he fails to do that, he will be responsible or culpable for the losses sustained by the individual by not having it bought it at the time that he was supposed to. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Ayin Gimel, Amud Bet.